This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're happy to have you join us this noon hour where we are talking local politics. Today, it's going to be state politics every weekday at noon. So thank you for joining us. We have a guest in studio today, and we are going to be filling your ears with things that astound you and make you bemoan the state of politics in Oregon, I think. I purposely held off asking this question because I haven't yet, you know, have a title for our guest, but it's going to be really fun. By the way, I hope you're all not floating away in the river flooding. I know that Highway 22 bridge is severely more impacted because you can't get to Independence Monmouth through River Road because it's underwater. So heaven forbid we have another alternative to go to get across the Willamette. So anyway, today we're going to talk about things happening at the Capitol. The way people behave, how much competency there is, with things that people don't know, people things that are trying to do without you looking, or even worse, do to you while you're looking, right?
Yeah, right, smile in your face, stab you in the back, yeah.
So we want to welcome to the studio Jonathan Lockwood. Jonathan, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It's nice to have you here. I have a feeling this is one of those days that if you were sitting here, we could talk for 3 hours. all right, so fill in the blank, you're a political what?
I would say I've been called a lot of things, but I consider myself a really ultimately an activist and an advocate for people who are not, you know, always being having their voice heard.
Great.
And so at the Capitol, I'm a spokesperson for Senator Thatcher and Linthicum and Representative Post.
Okay. So I was filling in blanks myself trying to figure this out. Jonathan Lockwood is junkie. I think that probably fits. Operative.
Yeah.
Somewhat at times, right? I guess if you're an activist, you got to be an operative. A political animal you are.
Yeah.
Right? You follow everything and you try to keep up the speed and everything. Tell us a little bit before we're going to dive in to the things that are happening at the Capitol, because folks, there are things happening having to do with your gun rights, having to do with foster care and the children in Oregon, all sorts of things. And they're interconnected. Your kicker, your pocketbook, your wallet. Sorry, I'm not supposed to say pocketbook. It's too old-fashioned. It shows how old I am.
Your debit card.
Jonathan. Your direct deposit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
So Apple Pay.
Yeah, right.
Jonathan, tell us a little bit about your history so people know, hey, where did he come from and how did he get involved in Oregon politics?
Yeah, so I actually started out in music publicity. I was studying public relations in my undergrad, and then I wound up in politics. My friend Nissa, if anybody wants to find someone to blame for me being involved in politics, they can write a thank you note to Nissa Szabo. I was graduating and there were no jobs. Obama was president and it was just a horrible economy. And I had a newspaper stack in my hand and I was ranting and causing a scene in the hall. And she just saw that and invited me to a dinner party. And that's where I got my first internship with the spokesperson for the Colorado House Republicans. So I got that, went to congressional campaigns, worked for really awesome candidates, and you know, just one job led to the next. And so I really moved up very rapidly in Colorado politics. And I saw in the country, Republicans have been, you know, even like the biggest donors have been retreating to the swingiest of swing states and retreating into the reddest of red states, while the left infiltrates into red states and turns them purple and turns them blue. And Republicans just don't like to fight, I think, is a problem. So I just saw that Oregon was just horrifically blue. And I saw, you know, what the governor was doing. And you know, Farioli, Ted Farioli was the minority leader in the Senate, and he... you know, we had a conversation in ahead of the election in 2016, and then eventually, like, you know, a job opened up and I took it. And so I came out here and then worked in the Senate in his office, the leadership office.
Well, so you like a challenge is what you're saying.
Yes.
And something has to be done.
Yeah. And then I ended up on, you know, after the legislative session ended and, you know, Farioli was retiring, I started thinking, you know, what am I going to do next? And, you know, Newt Bueller's campaign was hammering after me to, you know, join the campaign. And as soon as I joined the campaign, it was like, you know, handcuffs went on, Twitter went away. And so, you know, that lasted for a while. And then I started my own PR firm and picked up candidate Greg Wooldridge as a client and, you know, a few others, including Lou Ogden. And after the primary was over, there wasn't a lot of work left to do. It's, you know, Oregon. So I went down to Texas through the rest of the election and it was so hot. It was just not my scene in a lot of ways. And I love Oregon. And that's why, you know, when Senator Thatcher called me to, you know, saying we need you back here, I jumped at the opportunity. And I love the state. And I think it's, you know, we have to fight for Oregon and not, you know, do this like, you know, celebrity talk. I'm going to move to Canada after the session. You know, it really stay here and fight. So that's
all right. I've got a question for you. How many times a day do you breathe? I mean, you ask a question, you go. Let me back up on your statement there a little bit. Something that I caught early on in your statement about states that Republicans are and their resources are pulling out of places that they deem a lost cause that is a really blue state, right? And so they're entrenched in the red states and they are fighting in the purple states, right? Where there's, but the Democrats, in your view, are, hey, let's go into the red states and turn them purple, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting perspective. That's really interesting and scary, actually.
It is, and it's dangerous. They run all the same model legislation in all the states. You know, every bright blue state, you know, it used to be like, oh, Oregon or Colorado or Vermont would test some of this stuff out. Now it's everywhere. Hmm.
Okay, we're going to have a Republican, actually state legislator, on the show on Friday. So it'll be interesting. I've always really want to know if somebody going to be real frank with us what it's like to be in the minority in the building this session. Mm-hmm. You know, because this session, and here you are involved with three of our legislators, right? Mm-hmm. Offices, and they're all Republicans.
Yes.
And the battle that's happening at the Capitol, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how, to me, it just seemed like incredibly frustrating because you can get the whole caucus and not affect much difference, right? So what scares you the most about what's happening at the legislature this year? I mean, I know there's a long list. We're going to get to some specific topics. But in terms of, holy crap, if we could stop one thing, what would it be?
Disarmament bills.
So what's on the docket there?
Well, you know, Senate Bill 978 just passed a committee, and that was a bill that was supposed to be just a study of firearms, and they stuffed it with a bunch of other bills and amendments through what's called a gut and stuff, which essentially every piece of legislation has what's called a relating to clause before the rest of the bill, and that basically says what the bill's about. So as long as any legislation that gets drafted in a form of amendments fits that relating to clause, then it can be added to the bill. So if a relating to clause said relating to firearms, literally anything to do with firearms could be put in. Whereas if it said relating to background checks with firearms, then it would be more limited. And so what the Democrats have done on virtually every bill is made the relating to clause as wide open as possible.
That way you can take the stuff from other bills that are not going anywhere and pluck mm-hmm. that language and stick it onto another bill.
Right. And that bill was stuffed with making the Oregon Health Authority in charge of gun control, making it so that you can't even have a concealed carry, even if you have a license, in what's called public spaces or spaces adjacent to public spaces. It also would make you the criminal if someone stole your gun and committed a violent crime and shot up a school. You would be held liable for that, even if it was stolen from you. And the list just goes on, all the way down to they added pepper spray to the list of restricted weapons. So it's like you really have to wonder, what are they doing?
Wow. Pepper spray. You're really going to take that away from women in 2019?
Mm-hmm.
Even someone
or even guys, for that matter.
Yeah. Well, 2019, and just... Let's say they can ignore everybody who's demonstrating last week on the Second Amendment demonstration, mm-hmm. right? You're going to take away a basic self-defense weapon in 2019 from women?
Wow.
Well, they tried to do that, yeah, in Colorado in 2013 when I was the press secretary for the Colorado House Republicans, they were so extreme and doing things very similar, although not as extreme. I mean, by a long shot, which is weird to say. But at the time, extreme for the time, I guess. And they lost, you know, two recall elections. We recalled the Senate president, and we recalled a very well-liked Latina Democrat from a heavily Hispanic blue district. And we also successfully forced a resignation of Evie Hudak, who told a rape victim, you know, statistics just weren't on your side, when she was talking about how she was raped just feet away from a call box, because that became an issue because a Democrat state representative, mine at the time, State Representative Joe Salazar, said that women don't know if that they're going to get raped and they might pop off at someone. And that's why you have whistles and call boxes. Mm. And so that's why we brought, you know, this woman to the Capitol. And so they are disarming women, and they're disarming really everyone. And it's jeopardizing. It throws us into the crosshairs of criminals and basically invites more violence. And that's not safe for anyone.
All right. We're talking to Jonathan Lockwood. He is a political activist, an operative, an animal, and working on behalf of your causes here at the state capitol. So we're going to come back after the break. We're talking about the Heartland Institute, his own PR firm. We want to talk about the condition and the situation in Oregon with foster care parents. And you will be surprised. Hold on. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly sponsored by Hamlin's Nursery. It's spring. Bring it in.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're talking to Jonathan Lockwood today about all things politics, and there are things that are happening in the building that you should be aware of and a little bit frightened. So Jonathan has been active in campaigns, including recall campaigns in Colorado and in Texas and in Oregon. It sounds like you've made it your new home. Right?
Yes, I love it here.
So nice to have you in battling. You amuse me because you have so much feistiness, and I really like it. He's like, he can talk really well, don't you think, Dave? Mm-hmm. He can talk really well. He talks really fast. He talks faster than Brent. So, but you're feisty.
I'm like, Italian.
Yeah, we don't really want you to get away with this. And if you are trying to get away with this, we want everyone to know.
I know why he talks fast now, because if you're in the legislature and you talk fast enough, they can't interrupt you.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and lots of yerba mate. I survive off that. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So you have your own, in addition to being spokesperson for Senator Thatcher, whom we've had on the show, of course, and Bill Post, who used to have a show here on KYKN, mm-hmm. of course, no stranger to KYKN audiences, and Senator Lithingham, you have your own PR firm as well.
Yeah, I've had to put that on the back burner just because of time constraints, and I'm also finishing this semester as my last. I'm doing my capstone for my master's degree. Out of Georgetown University for public relations and corporate communications. And that capstone's actually centered on foster care.
Oh, all right. You want to dive into that now?
Yeah, absolutely.
What the heck have you seen happening here in Oregon, both in terms of operationally and legislatively?
Mm-hmm. So legislatively, you know, there are a package of bills that could help improve the lives of foster children, whether it's you know, has to do with tuition for school or expanding foreign exchange programs. But aside from that, there is a legislative effort on behalf of Senator Thatcher's office that, you know, she has been really at the tip of the spear fighting for answers about what exactly is going on in our foster care. And to elaborate, we are basically shipping kids across the country from Oregon that are in the foster care system to all of these lockdown psychiatric facilities, including the Clarinda Academy, which is notorious for abuse and torture and even rape.
Where's that?
That is in Iowa. And so it is a moral outrage what's happening to these kids, and it's heartbreaking, and it's such a dark issue. But we are, you know, looking at just a human rights issue, really a violation of human rights. these kids are basically ripped from very, albeit very broken homes, and then thrown into a system that treats them like, like a just a number almost. And, you know, in Colorado, for example, in 2015, I think there were 38 kids that went missing from the state's foster care system. And this is happening all over the country. So I guess it's, you know, Senator Thatcher wrote a letter to the governor and said, you know, basically that she wants answers to why these specific facilities and, you know, in terms of Clorinda, you know, Washington, the state of Washington ripped their kids back home, took their kids home because they realized how bad this was. I mean, one kid was, you know, these guards that work at these places, at these prison camps, literally, they are like jack dudes. I wouldn't want to be alone in the room with one of them. And they picked up and dropped 10 times this kid until he blacked out as punishment for trying to run away. Well, they're basically forced to do, in the guise of vocational behavioral health, they're making these uniforms for the for-profit First String company that's also owned by Clorinda. And I mean, you can't even believe what's, and this is just one facility in Florida in the early 90s that was owned by the previous company that then became another company that owns this Clorinda facility, was turned into a fight club. And so, I mean, this is just, it's almost out of a dystopian film. And when you look at these other issues, it's just like, how is this even happening? And so we need to get our kids back home. We need to get them in caring, loving, open homes where there are plenty of people who want to do this. But
are there?
There are. There are lots of people who want to open their homes, but they're also terrified to open up their homes because they're scared of CPS, you know, saying, oh, your father's a gun owner. We need to take you away from your parents. Like, the child protective services in this country is, you know, doesn't have a good reputation, and there's a reason why. And when you look at, you know, just the outright abuse, and so I got sidetracked. When Washington was pulling their kids out, we were deciding as a state to send our kids to the Clorinda Academy. So it's like, why, when you can just take a basic, easy Google search to find out, you know, these horror stories coming out of these facilities, why, when a state next to us is pulling their kids back home, are we sending our kids to there? Well, it's to fill up the beds. They need those beds filled, and because that's how they get paid. And you know, when two of these companies merged, they made $430 million. So there's huge profit to be made in these facilities, and it's at the expense of these kids.
All right, we're talking to Jonathan Lockwood, a political activist here in Oregon, spends a lot of time at the Capitol, and we're talking about the foster care issues and some of the issues surrounding the things we're not even aware of what happens to the kids. So the kids you're saying are going to an institution that are Oregon kids. They're leaving, obviously they're pulled from a dysfunctional home, what have you. Why are they not going into that loving home or a foster care home? Are these kids have criminal records, they have medical needs? Why are they going out of state?
Well, according to the governor and her administration, these facilities are better for the kids, and that's their policy. So, you know, there's this idea from, you know, last election cycle that Kate Brown's incompetent. She survived in Salem through the House, the Senate, the Secretary of State, and the governor's office. Do you really think somebody does all that just bumbling around and accidentally doing it? No. Mm-hmm. She is very smart. She knows what she's doing, and she's changed these policies to lead to what we're seeing. So she needs to answer why these facilities were chosen, why this is happening, and why are we spending, in just the last 3 months of 2018, $2.5 million of taxpayer money on sending these kids to those facilities when the big message is we don't have enough money for caseworkers. So, and we don't have money to pay these families that want to take kids in more money to better able to take care of them. So what we're looking at is a result of policy changes, not lack of action or, you know, total incompetence. These are deliberate decisions that are being made, and we need to find out who's really been making them.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but I can connect the dots and the money, and I'm so disappointed. I mean, not that I'm a Kate Brown voter, let's just say that, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm so discouraged that she's taking money from companies that do business with the state. We've talked about that on Newsmakers. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's so discouraging to have that as the leader of our state, a person who doesn't see a problem with that. And then it really makes me wonder, how much more money do we have mm-hmm. to follow, given what you're saying here, right?
Right. Well, and you know, Kate Brown zips around the nation and also the world. She is, you know, other governors in videos with her have subordinated themselves to her. And so she is well connected. She is well connected to the Clintons and to George Soros. She got campaign contributions from him. She also got money from Bloomberg and Bill Gates. And you look at her agenda, it is their agenda. Disarm the populace, forcibly vaccine. And, you know, the other thing is in Oregon's Department of Human Services, those kids are getting pinned down and forcibly injected with psychotropic drugs. And we're not even keeping track of what drugs these kids are being prescribed. So, you know, these kids are basically, you know, put into this system and they're administered drugs and then they're trying to run away. They want to go back home. And you look at that and then they're punished for trying to run away and then they're labeled a threat, you know, and it's a horrible nightmare, and it's real. It's happening. And to see these politicians like Jeff Merkley and Kate Brown stomp their feet and pound podiums and say, we care about the kids. And President Trump is, you know, running cages at the border, which Obama also did, and they didn't say anything. They're running that here in our own backyard, and they're doing it in their own state, or they're ignoring it. And it's like, you can only ignore something for so long, and you can only be so silent. And, you know, none of the media forces Kate Brown to answer these questions. She has a press availability every Friday, and any reporter could simply go in there and ask, why did your administration send, well, we don't even know the number of kids, because in February it was 11 kids at Clarinda, then in March it was 7 or 4. There's all these discrepancies of numbers. So we really, I mean, I feel like this sounds, you know, crazy, like out of a horrible novel. But it's happening and it's real. And it's, you know, some people say, well, it's so hard to get people to care about foster care. Why is that? I'm like, because, you know, we're not talking about, you know, this issue. This is a really crazy facet of it, you know, to just fluff over these issues. Like, it's just, well, you know, it's just not enough caseworkers or not enough money.
Yeah. And I think the real answer is going to come. There has to be more than one action. We may have more money for caseworkers. We may have more autonomy. We may have more foster kids, because people we're seeing who are active in our community here in St. L. Kaiser, you know, bemoan that we don't have enough families willing to step up. And, you know, for emergency foster care, for permanent foster care, for adoption and all of these things, that they are struggling finding enough homes. Now they're putting them in hotel rooms and having sex, right? So that's in the news last week. On that, we're going
to
come back.
And they sent that kid that reported that to a juvenile detention facility.
Oh, of course we did. Okay, you're listening to Newsmakers. Our guest, Jonathan Lockwood. Stick with us. There's more on Newsmakers, 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne in our studio today. Political activist Jonathan Lockwood. He is full of stuff. He's really paying attention to what's happening at the Capitol. Before the show started, he was talking about what's really scary is that the big picture, that these things are not isolated. And we know that. We've been talking on Newsmakers about how dangerous it is to have a supermajority in both houses and then the governorship as well. Right? And
yeah, pretty much eliminates all the checks and balances.
And then if you add to that, Jonathan was saying during the break, what about the press? And one of the checks and balances in America is the press. And if
supposedly,
nobody is challenging the governor, if the press is not challenging the governor, then it goes unchecked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's scary, folks. That's scary for the state, no matter what party's in charge. If you have all the power in the legislative and the governor's office and nobody is challenging you, no one's saying, hey, what about these kids? Mm-hmm. And it's Jonathan, it sounds like you're frustrated, like she's not even coming out and promising to do better or trying to defend it. Or
no, there's
answering
a
to it.
Hush, hush about it.
Well,
that's
if you
really
don't talk
sick.
About it, it's not a scandal. We learned that with Benghazi, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think for the rest of my life, I remember that it was Obama. I think he was being interviewed by Bill O'Reilly or something. And he's like, Benghazi, why are you talking about that? It's not even a scandal. It wouldn't even be anything except Fox News keeps talking about it. And I'm like, well, that's because you haven't answered the questions yet. You want to just pretend like it's not a scandal. Now we have this in Oregon in terms of, and this is probably just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the governor and the things mm-hmm. that she feels she needs to be held accountable for, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, that's the foster system emergency is the only issue that she did not bring up in her state of the state.
Oh, let's not talk about it. So therefore it doesn't exist. All right. Let's talk a little bit. We mentioned some guns rights bills, some Second Amendment bills. Any specific things? I know you mentioned trying to take away bump stock capability. Is it rounds like they were doing in California? Limitations?
We could see that come up. You know, they said, oh, that bill died, Senate Bill 501. But there is no point in saying anything is dead because really nothing is dead yet because they have all these bills that they can stuff and all these committees and all these joint committees. But nothing is truly dead until the last Prius leaves the building.
Okay. And, you know, people who are listening aren't necessarily people who have time to go to the Capitol and be familiar with all the terminology.
Because we have jobs.
But we want you to all be aware that gut and stuff is something that people should be aware of. And that's the terminology in the building where you take a bill and you might even just hollow out the melon and taking out with the content of it. And as Jonathan Lockwood was saying, you know, they use the this is related to and then they stuff that bill full of other things. And this may happen in the last 24 hours of the session.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, I know our bill died in committee. Right, Jonathan? Mm-hmm. It might die in committee, but now we're going to take the content of the bill and we're going to stuff it into another bill with another bill number and get it passed.
Right. And a lot of these bills say that, you know, for example, like the Oregon Health Authority shall adopt rules for blank, 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 blank.
Those words are terrifying.
Yeah.
Right?
And that just means for people out in the public that they can not only that they can, but they're given permission to have unlimited rulemaking as long as it fits the ideas of this, this, and this. And it's just, it's lawlessness.
Tell us a little bit about the Heartland Institute. What is that and what's your role with them?
Yeah, the Heartland Institute is a remarkable think tank. It's national. It's a national think tank. And they have tons of publications. I mean, dozens of different publications, and they have podcasts. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. And it's a policy driven institute. They have, you know, what's called the National Board of Policy Advisors. They have, you know, lawmakers and all sorts of people on there. And they invited me to come onto their Board of Policy Advisors when I was running Advancing Colorado, what was described as a bellicose conservative advocacy group. And we took down single payer in Colorado, 80-20. We spearheaded the opposition coalition, you know, the center right coalition. We'd always get together like every month, like 40, you know, spokespeople and executive directors and heads of organizations, what have you. And people laughed that they were like, no, single payer is not going to get on the ballot. And I'm like, yes, it is. And then they said, you know, oh, we have to fight it over a tax. And I'm like, no, like nobody cares about a tax hike anymore the way that they used to. Mm-hmm. And we have to take this down on grounds that of what it will actually do to healthcare. And so I don't want to get sidetracked on that, but the Heartland Institute is great. They put out a lot of really great content.
What's your relationship with them?
Yeah. So I actually had a conversation with one of their director of communications, telling him about the hell that's, you know, being exploded in Oregon. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, you gotta get this stuff out there. And so I'm going to be writing some pieces for them on some of these, but I've mostly focused on healthcare, energy, and education for them in the past. And so that's probably where I'll be focusing.
Great. So let's move to the vaccine issues. And mm-hmm. is that really falling on party lines? Pretty strictly, or is there a lot of play back and forth depending on someone's personal
yeah.
experience?
So in the legislature, it is considered a bipartisan bill because one person from each party you know, or from our party in each chamber joined the list of co-sponsors. But truly, it's every Republican is against it, and many Democrats are even against it as well, but just more quiet about it and taking care of that more internally. There's a reason they tacked on this re-education fund, you know, for re-educating vaccine-hesitant parents, giving that fund to OHA to do with whatever. So they tacked that part of the bill onto the bill so that they could bypass the Senate Healthcare Committee, because they didn't have the votes on the Senate Healthcare Committee to pass it. So that's why when they added the money aspect to this Forcible Injections Act is what I call it, then it would go to Ways and Means where they could pass it out of there. And yeah, it's just legislative wonky procedural stuff. But anyway,
like, it's like what they're doing is a sausage scam. Get made.
Yeah, that's, it's a scam. It's a scam. And, you know, basically what, you know, House Bill 3063 will do is allow the Oregon Health Authority to become your kid's doctor. An unelected bureaucrat will be in between you and your children's doctor, and in between you and your own child.
As it relates to vaccines.
Yeah. Well, and you know, right now they have, they've been working on an anti-opioid addiction vaccine. So the word vaccine needs to be stopped. It's a drug. They're drug companies. And it puts pharma in front of our schools because it's making your kid, you and your kid will basically be held hostage until you give up your kid, get their shots, and then you can get in, you know, entered into school. So it's making, and it's just not even just public schools, it's even digital schools, and kids will be basically barred from entering public spaces if they're not getting vaccinated. And honestly too, it's like most of these parents are, you know, they, their kids have gotten most of the vaccines, and there's just maybe one that they, their doctor has given them an exemption for, or they don't feel like their kid needs like an HPV vaccine, and there's been a lot of vaccine injuries. And, you know, even today I saw this news article was posted with a baby's picture with, oh, the measles. Well, the mom saw this and was like, no, that's my child. And you didn't have permission to use that photo. And that was a picture of them not with measles, but with an adverse reaction to the vaccine. So they had to issue out a correction. And so people are waking up. But making entering public spaces, or making as a condition to enter public spaces, forcible drug injections. I mean, this looks out like out of, you know, I feel like 2019 is 1984. And I got that from one of my friends. But it's just, it's scary.
All right. So it's already the law of the land, is it not, Jonathan, that you're expected to be vaccinated current to go into the public schools, right? So what new requirements? They're trying to get rid of some of the exemptions, right? Is that the crux of the bill that we're trying to
move forward? Right, they're trying to make it so. And what happens is with these exemptions too, is that, you know, basically some doctors are more willing to give them out. This bill will give the Oregon Health Authority, again, everything always goes to the Oregon Health Authority. It's bizarre and it's very scary. Whether it's gun control or enforcing vaccines or sending parents to newly delivered, where, you know, new infant is in the home, sending an OHA worker to the home to, you know,
oh, yeah.
You know, all this stuff is so bizarre. But what was your question again?
Just in the bill itself.
Oh, yeah.
What is it that would change what's already been required?
Yeah. So the danger of House Bill 3063 is that it's being constantly tinkered with behind the scenes. And so we don't even really know what the bill is going to be when it passes. Governor Kate Brown has made, you know, forced injections a big part of her agenda. And she said that, you know, nobody has the right to, you know, threaten children's safety. And that's interesting with her foster system. So yeah, this bill will make it so it's harder to get an exemption for your kid. And then it also puts targets on every physician that's doing, you know, more willing to give these exemptions, because like in California, you know, they're basically putting their names on a list and then they get targeted and then they get shut, their office is shut down and they get their license revoked. So there, it's just, you shouldn't even need an exemption. Like the bottom basic line is no drug company has the right through the government to forcibly inject you at the point of a gun. And that's Jared Polis's word. That's the Democrat. So
All right. So for the record, the views expressed are Jonathan Lockwood's, not necessarily those of the host. I actually favor vaccination, so I'm a big vaccination advocate. I don't know about the legislation. I certainly don't know about the Oregon Health Authority, but it's just my viewpoint. I think that history is pretty clear on how much human suffering, illness, and death vaccinations have prevented.
Right.
But we can talk public policy and what's forcible and what's the government's role, you know, all day long. All right. Jonathan Lockwood is our guest on Newsmakers. We got him for a little bit more time. We're going to talk a little bit more about the politics happening in our capital. So stick with us here on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. First of all, I want to acknowledge and thank Aubrey Ann, our intern here, learning about the radio industry, for bringing our guest in today. She prepared the questions. She got our guest in, set the topics. And so thank you, student at Corbin.
Yeah, right.
Proud student at Corbin. So thank you for helping with the show. And congratulations on bringing up really great topics in. So kudos to our intern here at KYKN and the Newsmakers. And Jonathan Lockwood's our guest. We're talking all things politics. We're talking during the break about simply reaching too far, when you're going to reach into parental decisions, when you're going to reach into someone's gun cabinet, when obviously they're going to reach into your pockets. We knew that was going to happen. When they're going to reach into your kicker, when they're going to reach into... You know, all of these things.
That just amazes me that they think that they can just access the kicker.
When it's a reach too far, we've seen backlash. And we're talking earlier in the hour, Jonathan was talking about it happened in Oregon. I mean, in Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Where people just got...
And they had got
nobody's
recalled
on board
over
here.
It.
Yeah. Yes. Hopefully
but
it happens.
Those recalls happen because people were willing to fire back and make it personal. When you're stealing people's tax rebates, you're stealing their firearms and you're stealing parental rights from them and making their lives, you know, much harder, stealing their property tax exemption, you know, for seniors and all these different tax credits. They're just raking in as much money as they can. You have to, I mean, that's pretty personal. There's nothing more uncivil than what they're doing to people. And so, you know, this fear of naming names, you know, we have our work cut out for us after the session is over.
So how do you think Oregon and Colorado differ in terms of their politics? Is it more balanced in Colorado? Is it just as bad?
I don't. Since I left, it got much more blue since I left for Oregon.
They probably want you back then.
Some of them do. But, you know, it's interesting. As parties shrink, it's easier for a small faction to control them. And we have a very polite faction really holding their reins in our state. And in Colorado, they have very far-right social conservatives at the reins and, you know, all these different dynamics. But the biggest thing is, you know, like Jared Polis said, the governor, progressive, about vaccines, which he supports vaccines, was just, you can't forcibly inject someone at the point of a gun. And I mean, that would get you in so much trouble out here for saying. And so there's just a difference in, like, in Colorado, you know, it's a cool mix of, like, East Coast, West Coast. And, you know, professionally, it's more East Coast. Socially, it's more West Coast. And, you know, even the Democrats are pretty pro-business out there. They were when I was there. I guess the biggest difference is really just people are more willing to call people out, and they're more direct. And they're, you know, Coloradans are quite entertaining. You know, some reality show stars from Colorado are always, like, you know, the funniest or the villains on the show, I guess. But, you know, like, people have this idea of what people like are how people are. I've had too much yerba mate today. how people are like in Boston. And so, you know, Denver has this kind of, you know, brawler vibe to it. Like, you know, let's take this fight into the streets. And here it's like, oh, so. And, you know, when they wrote a hit piece about me that I, you know, GOP firebrand crashes into Oregon's polite politics, I'm like, polite? There's nothing polite about anything that happens in Oregon politics. So, yeah, I think it's just more direct and more upfront.
I appreciate that perspective a lot, actually. And I think that sometimes too many fights happen in the halls. Too many happens in the back rooms. Instead of being out in public and, mm-hmm. like you said, just a brawl on the street. Mm-hmm. Let's fight about this public policy, but let's air it out, folks. Mm-hmm. Let's air it out so all of us are aware of what's happening. Instead of just going, let's go to back room and we'll decide what every family and what's good for every Oregonian, we'll just tell them.
Do you think
that's scary?
Do you think that people are just burnt out on the politics?
I think people think that other people are, but most people, I think, are still all about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a reason why in 2017, the Democrats brokered a deal with Farioli that none of them would tweet as long as I didn't. And that's just bizarre, you know, for an entire caucus of majority Democrats in the legislature agreeing to not tweet as long as a spokesperson doesn't. I mean, that's how they don't how much they didn't want what was going on to be out in public.
So Jonathan Lockwood does work for Senators Thatcher and Linthicum and Representative Post. Little insider hope baseball here, hopefully from, because I feel, do you feel like Republican or conservative voters and representatives, elected representatives, are a little fatalistic, or do you think they still have their dukes up?
Oh, well, the members I work for, which I'm so grateful to be working in their offices, they're very much more like, we're not going to go down without a fight. We're not going to let these bills pass and just, you know, sit on our hands and be, you know, so about it. And so, yeah, I think there's a huge energy. I mean, thousands of people have been coming out, just like the thousands of people came out to Raytheon's firearms event, you know, a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and these other rallies. So people are waking up.
Good. It's good to hear. So speaking of people waking up, that's part of your role. Right. As your firebrand, it's part of your role is wake people up, get the word out. Any advice for other people out there who want to pay more attention mm-hmm. and want to get their voices heard and want to make more awareness?
Yes, you have to get on Twitter. I will help anybody that needs help with Twitter. You have to get on the hashtag ORPOL. That's where, you know, we have a lot of instant access to information. Use your Facebook, live stream everything, live stream going to town halls and cornering these people and asking them direct questions and making them answer for these policies. So, you know, it's just about generating content. And it's 2019. Forget about like little typos and all this and just start getting out there and reporting it.
So you would describe that as citizen journalists.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone's a reporter now. Yeah.
Everyone's a reporter. All right, get on Twitter, ORPOL, Oregon Politics, right? Mm-hmm. And you have your own, is that your own Twitter handle, or are you still
just search Jonathan Lockwood, it will pop up. It's Jonathan _ Lockwood with no vowels.
All right, what's next for you?
Well, I'm going to be going back into, the Oregon Capitol. I was thinking of something, but never. So I'm going to be going back to the Capitol here shortly.
Well, hopefully we'll have you back on and give some updates as we, especially when we get to crunch time and as the session winds up and the things that we really have to watch.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's kind of a scary time. That's Jonathan Lockwood's been our guest here on Newsmakers. Tomorrow we've got Bud Pierce, ran for governor as a Republican, and that the Dr. Pierce will be in. So we'll look forward to that tomorrow. Thanks for being a Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.